Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 740. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
The shutdown is over. Chris can finally give all of us our back pay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. And do
that. Release those files.
And we can release the files too. We do it. We could do it all, Jeff. Earl is here as well.
Seditious, traded on this podcast. All of you should be hung.
Jesus, we're going hard.
I thought we were shooting us or executing.
Yeah, by hanging, evidently, he is endorsed today. So,
just yeah. Normal shit.
Bringing that back. It's exactly. Jeff is here.
Yo.
It's all so normal, which is a very big shame. Yeah, the shutdown ended. The files are maybe going to be released. There's a law saying that they're supposed to be released.
This has to be signed by certain people.
Well, he signed it last night, right? Yeah.
They're fucking around here. Like,
yeah.
Oh, they're going to find
we're doing an investigation into Clinton.
Not to release certain parts of it. And there's going to be a big thing.
I do appreciate that the House, they brought a bill saying that they're going to strip that nonsense from the shutdown bill about six senators or whatever who could sue the government because they were investigated.
Kind of pull a quick one there.
Yeah. So at least everybody in the House was on. They were all able to get together and go, that seems fucked up. How about no? Yeah.
How about no?
But yeah, we've got a lot. We got a lot to talk about. There's
all video game related. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. There's lots of video game stuff to talk about tonight. We're gonna kick it off though with our quick talk about what I think is the worst Resident Evil movie. Resident Evil Apocalypse.
I will say I was surprised. I put it out on social media and so many people got back to me being like, this is their favorite one. Holy and I was shit. Like, what?
That's that insane. Just absolutely insane. Yeah. 2004, Earl. Take us back to 2004.
So I wanted to try something actual proper this week. So I actually wrote up a document. So Resident Evil Apocalypse, released in September of 2004, directed by Alexander Witt with a runtime of 93 minutes, based off the Resident Evil series, mainly with elements from Resident Evil 2 and 3. I also have a note that I'll get to later, but Resident Evil Apocalypse is set directly after the events of the first film, where Alice escaped from an underground facility overrun by zombies. She now must band together with other survivors to escape the zombie outbreak, which has spread to nearby Raccoon City. This film introduces characters from the franchises, including Jill Valentine and Carlos. Alice's former teammate is converted into the monster, the Nemesis, and Alice deals bad with her at the end. The main thrust of the plot is Alice and her crew must rescue Augie, which is the daughter of the doctor from Resident Evil. A budget of $45 million with a box office of $129 million, which is about a 3x multiplier, did really well. And of course, we would get 4 more of these. So yeah, that is Resident Evil Apocalypse out in 2004. And this, I think Chris and I are on similar pages. I don't know if it's the worst one, but it's the one where it's the movie starts to try to incorporate elements from the video games. And I think it makes for a worse movie going experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Rewatching it, I was like, this is really, really bad. Because they introduce things from the games, like Nemesis is there, but Nemesis is like he's a biological robot. Like they can control. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like that's not what Nemesis was.
It's so funny watching it because it's clearly like somebody had seen the original Terminator, or I think Terminator 2, where it's like the scene that when he's introduced, there's the scene where he has to kill everybody except for the one dude who is not a threat. And that is very much taken out of like the Terminator, where Terminator 2, where he has to like delay the cops without taking them out because of John. And I'm like, okay. Alex gets all these cool scenes, but it's like, oh, we had cool scenes for her, but we don't have a plot. Like her coming into the church on the back of a motorcycle is really cool, but it's like, why? How does this make logistical sense? Why does the vicar just stand right still for the bike to run into it?
Yeah. Nothing was like planned out. It was just like, all right, this is cool, right? It's like, it's not. Yeah, we get like I guess there's like certain aspects of 2 and 3 here. Jill is wearing her outfit from 3, which just looks stupid. Like it looks dumb in the game too, but it's kind of like, yeah, it's whatever, it's a video game. Here everybody else is wearing like tack gear and she's wearing yeah. She's like dressed up like she's fucking Lara Croft. Like, yeah, nothing worked for me in this one. Like, it's like, oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think some of the ludicrousness of the action sequences worked for me. But again, in a vacuum, it works. So.
Because the vacuum cleaner sucks it up, and you don't have to look at it anymore.
So there is a scene where I think it's like early on with Nemesis. He's like walking down a street towards like a police station. He has a chain gun in his hand, and I don't know if he was this guy who's originally in the police station that Jill frees. He ends up in this police station with these cops, and Nemesis pulls this chain gun and somehow precision hits like the 17 cops that are in there, but not the civilian.
Well, again, that's what I was saying. That was a Terminator thing. Cause
yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, but there's certainly the thing where they show you like, oh, there's 12 star agents and one civilian. Yeah. And it's like, to your point, he has Terminator vision. It's like, oh, civilian, non-threat or threat minimal and something like that. And it's like, okay, how do you know that?
Yeah. Oh, so goofy. There's a scene where Alice is running, or I don't even know what the hell it is. It's like a round building. And a helicopter is chasing her, just shooting all the fucking windows out. Yet she's somehow faster than a fucking helicopter. It's all so very, very stupid. I'm assuming only Earl and myself watched this one this week.
I did not partake.
I had to reorganize the individual grains of litter in the cat box.
Yeah, that's fair.
Very time consuming. Very important though.
Jeff, have you ever seen it?
No, I've only seen the first one.
Okay. I mean, that's the one. If you're going to watch one of these...
It got me to stop at that one. I was like, yeah.
And you didn't see the newer one either, right?
Mm-mm.
I would also say that I just have to point out, because this is actually one of the tropes that as somebody who watches a ton of bad movies have gotten tired of after a while. Omar Epps is just an extremely annoying sidekick. But he also has that thing where he's like the blackety-black sidekick. Like, he has custom-made guns. Oh, these are custom, homie. Like, okay. Why is that a thing?
Oh, shit. But he was the... I didn't realize that was Omar Epps. That's funny. Was it? Was
yeah.
it?
Yeah. No, it's not Omar Epps. Sorry, it's Mike.
I was like, I like Omar Epps. That's weird.
This keeps getting better.
It's Mike Epps. I do. Sorry. Yes, Mike Epps.
That is him. I was like, Omar Epps is a pretty good actor.
I had the Epps name, and I'm like, oh, Omar's the famous one. But yeah, Mike, because I like Mike Epps too, because he's also on. I watched the Upshaws on Netflix, which I really enjoy. Like, he's more of a TV actor. And this is also something
a lot of movies.
This is also something we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
But this ends the movie with them. This ends the movie with them in like a good place, but then they have to walk it back the next movie because they can't, like, because they all get out, they all survive. And then at the start of the next movie, I think Omar Epps dies. Apologies.
Mike Epps.
Yes, Mike Epps. Sorry. So it's not an racism thing. Well, I can't be racist in this regard. It's an idiotic thing. But yes, he dies at because again, you can't have Alice has to be on her own, so she has to get rid of most of these characters. I forget if Joe's even in the next one. I guess we'll find out. But yeah, this is, and then like the whole, oh, here's this big evil guy, and it's like, who's this evil dude? Like, he's just around. Like, characters are introduced and they're supposed to be important, and they aren't.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of like people that are like, oh, these people are important, these people are not. They set it up so that like Alice is
important. Like, because she's affected, but she's like an enhanced human.
Well, yeah, well, so they kind of like, oh, you are part of the same project as Nemesis.
Yeah.
So like, there's Project Alice and Project Nemesis.
Because there's one part of the movie where she just goes, she's by herself, and I think she sees him. Oh, she sees him in the distance, and she's like, Nemesis. I'm like, wait, what? How do you know this? I think I missed something here.
Yeah, I don't know how she would know that would be who that is or what that is. Makes zero sense. Yeah, but they set it up at the end. There's like, I will give it credit for this, and I don't think it pays off because Alice continues to be the hero of these films, but they set her up as like a, oh, we've activated her. Like, Umbrella has activated her. They're going to find these people and all the people, all their documents, and wipe them off. So that this news doesn't get out. I don't know how that plays out. I don't remember.
It does not really pay out that much in these movies. Yeah. Now again, that's one of the stupid things. Like, they introduce, because I did not realize this. I know that because, you know, I think Paul W.S. Anderson is usually associated with these movies, mm-hmm. but this is one that he doesn't direct. I don't think he directs the next one either.
No, he does. He does write it. And I don't know if he wrote this one either.
He writes this. That's what I was gonna say. He does write this, which is the thing that confuses me, because I'm like, oh, so it's the same. He writes all of them, so like he knows the lore of the games or the lore of these movies.
I do wonder if maybe after, you know, the moderate success of the first film, if they were like, hey, you know, the criticism we got is there needs to be more video game shit in it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that's
so he threw more video game shit in it.
And that's what they continue to do, because you'll get one that introduces Chris, you'll get one that introduces again, you can tell when Resident Evil 4 happens because like the giant things with the sledgehammers come.
Claire's in the next one, I believe.
Yes, and I think she repeats because she is
Allie Larder.
Yeah. So, and I think Jill comes back at some point later on. Oh, she does, because she has to come back for Chris's thing in part 4. So, yeah. But I'm sure Tony and Jeff want to hear all about Resident Evil Apocalypse. I'm just gonna say we can just dump this in F and move on. Maybe
that's where that's where I dumped it.
Okay, I was gonna say maybe O D, yes. But
Jeff F.
Is it a video game movie?
Yeah, it is.
Not really, no.
I mean, it's based on one, but all right. F all around. That might be. No, I think everybody has Mortal Kombat Annihilation also as an F. So yeah, that joins our unanimous club of an F. Resident Evil Apocalypse 2004. Earl, what is December's film?
So we made it a boo-boo, or I made it a boo-boo, I should say. And because I'm going off the Wikipedia list, which is based, it's video game movies, mm-hmm. which tends to count ones that are based off of video games. But in between there, a little company, at the time known as Squaresoft, and because of this movie, they had to change their name because they had to merge because they lost so much money off of this movie. We did skip over Final Fantasy: The Spirit Within. So we're going to go back, and I believe this is 2001. Which is the, at the time, I think one of the most expensive CG movies made. And again, Square sunk a lot of money into it and ended up merging with Enix not too far after that. So
yeah, I remember going to see this in theaters. I didn't like it then. So my guess is I'm not going to like it this time out.
I don't hate it. But it was like, it's kind of boring.
Yeah. Great. It's, and not Final Fantasy. Like,
there's that's bad. Worse than yeah. being bad.
Yeah. It is kind of worse to be bad. But
there's a lot of interesting stuff around Spirits Within, though.
The whole thing with Queer betting the farm on that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we won't. We'll cover it next time because we don't get to cover any other Final Fantasy movie, but there are a bunch of them. Or I guess there's not a bunch. I think there's three more.
Yeah, but they're all like direct to video. This one actually came out in theaters, and bombed.
I mean, yeah,
not like amazingly bombed, but like it.
I mean,
it lost money. But we'll talk about that next time.
There's one thing I do want to talk about just real quick. This is the introduction of Zach Ward, who in the movie plays Nikia, I want to say. He's like the German star agent. And the reason I want to bring him up is because he, until Jet Back, I think he was like the MVP of video game movies. We will see him again three more times. Because he's in Postu, he's in The Name of the King, and he's in one more video game movie. So he's in four of them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good for him, I guess.
Random bit of trivia. I noticed it because one of the reasons I wasn't going to rewatch Resident Evil is that I actually had seen it earlier this year because I had a friend who had never seen them. And I'm like, oh, we should do all the Resident Evil movies. We got to three, and I think they lost interest, so...
And it's for me, Resident Evil is very much like Star Trek.
It's like in
reverse. It's like 1, 3, and 5 are good. Yeah, they're entertaining.
They're better. yes, none of them are great, but they're actual movies.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna take a Resident Evil break, and we're gonna watch Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within for December. And that'll be in a couple weeks. But we have a lot of new games to talk about, including one that Jeff's been playing all day. And I played a bit of as well, Kirby Air Riders.
Woohoo!
Okay, I'm very curious about this because I tried the test demo. Mm-hmm. And I never paid the... I want to hear your thoughts.
No, it was like, so what did you think of the test demo, Earl? Like, if you had never played Air Rider before, right? That was the first one?
Yeah.
Kirby Air Rider, which I've never played either.
Yeah. Wait, is the sequel just a plural of the original?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, the first one's Air Ride.
It's Air Ride.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think the first Air Rider. You say as Kirby, or am I mistaken in that regard?
That's a good question. I've did not know this was even a series until
it wasn't a series.
I didn't know it was like a game that like existed before now. I never played Kirby Air Ride. Yeah.
I never played Kirby Air Ride. I was aware of it, and I remember when it came out, it got bad reviews, and so I was like, I don't need to play. Like, it was reviewed as like a game for babies when it came out. Like, oh, you just press one button, blah blah blah. Like, and like people kind of wrote it off, but there were a lot of people. Like my wife's daughter, she loves that game, and I think, you know, she was a little kid when she played it. You know what I mean? So like, there are people that have a lot of affection for that original one, but none of us here have played the GameCube one.
Right? Seems that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is all new to all of us. And I think this is way, like, this new one is way more fleshed out of an idea than what the original was.
Yes. But I think the big thing, and again, this is kind of what I got it from when he did the presentation, but I think actually playing it, is that it's not Mario Kart. It's not a kart racer. And I think that's the thing that I knew it wasn't, but like playing it, it's like wrapping your head around, like, oh, this is very, it's not just not a kart race. It's not a racer in that traditional sense.
It is and it isn't. Like, it's,
I'd say it is. I'd say, I would like,
there's a lot of racing.
I'd say it is a kart racer. It's just a very
different simplified version. Like,
well, I think also just a different take on it. Like, and just trying to do, like, yeah, simplified from a control standpoint, but like,
yeah,
trying to do,
like,
I think this game
there's lots of mechanics layered.
I think this game is way more ambitious and fleshed out than the latest Mario Kart. Crazy.
I think it does a better job of mending like an actual interesting single player and multiplayer aspect. I don't know if it's necessarily a better experience than Mario Kart. Again, depending on what you want. And again, I would pay to test demo a little bit, but I was just like, oh, like the whole, again, like, it's, I mean, it's a two button game. It's not a one button game because he made a big deal about adding the second button. Like that, getting used to that, why he said it's different than what I would expect from a kart race or a racing game. Is you don't accelerate or brake. I mean, I guess you do brake. You don't accelerate in the way that you think.
Yeah, you brake. You don't accelerate on your own.
It's kind of, you move essentially. Like, the game moves for you. You control left and right, but like, you're always going forward. Even when you, well, I guess you can come to a complete stop.
You can come to a complete stop. You can also get turned around. Like,
yeah,
it's like you are always moving in forward in wherever your rider is pointing, whether your machine is pointing, but you can get fucked up and turn around.
Yes, and there are elements, I think, more in the city trials where you can actually get out the vehicle as well, to get off the vehicle, I should say.
Yep, yeah, you can hop off, and I mean, there's not much reason to do that, but you can.
Is it, how do you hop off? Is it like tapping A?
You gotta hold Y.
Yeah, hold Y.
Yeah, everything is like, it's all like. So did you run the tutorials, Jeff?
So I also tried the demo, and because I was like, I was so, you know, again, having never played the GameCube one, I'm like, do I want to drop $70 on another racing game when I don't even know if I like this? So I tried the demo, and the first time I went to go try a demo, it wasn't going on at that point, but it was interesting because like, the demo itself is pretty fleshed out, and that includes the full tutorial. So, like, I went through all of that, and I was like, that's interesting. Like, I did play through the...
Okay, yeah.
At least, like, I'm assuming it's the same.
I mean, there's, like, five or six different tutorials. Like, it'll teach you, like, the basic mechanics of, like, racing. Then there's, you know, the City Ride. I can't remember what it's called. City Trial, like, there's a tutorial for that. There's a tutorial for like powers, like how to copy powers and how to use them. And then there's one about the different machines, and that's the one that like teaches you how to get off the basically your car.
I do remember in the in the demo and the tutorial there was a lesson about getting off the machine. I thought it was tapping A. I just couldn't remember because I've not done that in my gameplay. I haven't like had a reason that I would want to do that. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I don't. That's the thing. I don't know why you would unless like you're having a hard time because you can change machines. By just running into them, like
that's what I'm saying. If you see another, if you see another machine, you just run into it.
Your car can also build up, so that's one of the reasons you also.
Oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I did get a warning in one of the challenges that.
Okay, but if it blows up and you jump off it and you have no cart, like you're kind of fucked, right? Like,
well, yeah, but I think, it's a combination of stuff like that. It's a combination of being able to. What am I trying to say? It's a combination of also being able to, because you, like, I think you start off with a basic car. You can get a more advanced one.
Yes. So yeah, like
different.
Well, I assume you start out. Everybody starts out as Kirby, right? Like, and with this,
no,
the
star. You start off with your character.
So like you, whoever you pick, do they all start off with like the yellow rider, like the one that Kirby has on the cover. That's like the base one. Yeah, and then like you, by doing other things, you can unlock other machines. There's like challenges and stuff. Like if you do this, oh, you've unlocked this and you can now select it when you select your character. But then like in the city trial, there are just carts out. There's just machines out on the like road, you can pick them up.
Okay, then that, because that's the one mode I have not played yet. So, it makes sense. But wait, in that one, you can't just drive into the machine and grab it? Or
I think you can do that, but not all of them.
Yeah, like they're just out there like items, Jeff. But like as Earl said, like if your machine blew up,
okay,
you might want to jump off and like walk over to one and grab it, or if. Like I was having some trouble getting the ride I wanted. I eventually did, but like I kept like mistargeting it over and over again. So maybe
easier
just easier to hop off and walk over. Kirby does not move very fast when he's walking though. So, but I assume none of them really do. It's funny because like the base speed is like. I don't know, 25, 30 miles an hour is what it says on there. So, like, you're never moving like super fast, but compared to Kirby walking, you're cruising at warp speed. There's lots of different modes. There's like a race mode, the city trial mode, which that's a weird thing. It's like it drops you down into an open area, and you drive around, basically like upgrading your car. You know, your machine by picking up like power ups and okay, so like you can run over a heart, it'll give you an extra pip of health. You can run over a boost, which gives you better boost or whatever. So, and at the end of that 5 minutes, which you're doing this with the other seven racers or whatever, it'll throw you into something like it could be an actual race, it could be one of the other like different modes they have. There's like one where you ride over buttons or something to get points. There's a bunch of different things. So like that's what you would do. You would upgrade your cart there. Have you played the one where you do it from the top?
That gets mixed in top ride. Everything gets mixed into road trip mode, which is a story mode.
Yeah.
And so you'll be forced to do some of those top down.
Which Jeff's been playing for like 14 hours now, and it just goes on forever.
14? Didn't it just come out today?
No, he hasn't played that much. Okay. It's a lot. Like the single player is long. Then the way it's structured is you're driving down like a straightaway road and you'll come up on like three racers ahead of you and you can choose to race them or whatever the activity is. You
get to choose, like, as you go down the road, as you progress through this mode, you'll get to choose, like, between different events. Like, you'll see three different icons up ahead, and you go, okay, I want, you know, one will be a race, one will be, like, defeat this guy, one will be whatever the fuck, right? But, like, you get to choose which event you want to do as you're going down this road. And each stage has, like, 10 different events going down this road, and that's just one stage. And so, like, to get through the road trip mode, it is, I think, 11 stages and then a final boss. It takes a while, dude. Again, it says that I've only played it for an hour and a half, and I'm getting near the end. But, like, dude, I was playing, like, all day. Like, it eats up a significant amount of time to go through this road trip mode. And then, like, the thing is, like, okay, you've done that, but you've only done that with, like, one character. And you've only seen certain paths, because again, you like, as you go down the road, you're always getting choices. I want to go left, I want to go right, I want to take the middle path. And so there's no way to see or get everything by just playing through the story mode once.
It reminds me a lot of the single player campaign that they had in, was it the Smash Brothers that was on Wii?
Okay, so that, like, that's something else we should touch on is, like, this is everything about this game. Everything about this game. Like, you could hand this to somebody who does not know anything about, like, behind-the-scenes video game shit, and if they've played Smash Brothers, they'd be like, why is this, like, exactly like Smash Brothers? Like, the menus all look the same. There's an announcer. It's the same announcer from Smash Brothers, it is just like so rich with like modes and content, and like, so each mode has 150 achievements. Like, it's
oh god,
and they like unlock things too, Tony. So it's like,
yeah,
like you're unlocking characters, you're unlocking different machines, you're unlocking, like, you know, stickers and whatever, like, but you're classic and tracks, courses. Like courses, yeah, like you're unlocking different courses. There's a ton of stuff.
Like, I played through, and it's weird. It doesn't seem like it's a huge game. Like, if you go right into the race mode, there's like 8 tracks there. I played through them all once. I unlocked 4 tracks from the original game. It's just like, okay, and maybe there's not more. Maybe there is more. I don't know. But like, he does a good job of like remixing all this shit so that like when you go into story mode, it's like you'll be doing the same event. So like, you know. But like it's just like it just feels like you're playing through a medley of different things. Like, I don't know, like you know, yeah, you'll do a race, but then the next one will be like you're falling through the sky and you're trying to get through rings that have different point values. You know what I mean? Like,
and you got to do it. You're doing it against 3 other racers, and you have to score fit. So like, you get a time bonus for hitting the bottom first.
Yeah.
But you also have to kind of like fly through these rings, so you're picking up points as well.
Actually,
so like, you want to do it fast. Yeah, it's a fun mode.
I love that event. There's another one where you like launch off a ramp at a spinning wheel with a bunch of numbers on it, and you're trying to hit a spot on the wheel. You know, you want to get the I want to get the 500 point one, not the 20 point one. Yeah, just it mixes it up, and then like there's also like combat. There's bosses. It's fucking nuts, dude. The game is like kind of insane, I think. Like,
there's a ton of content. I don't think it plays as well as Mario Kart. It's
so different. I think it's,
yeah. It's mechanically very different from Mario Kart.
I'd say I'm more impressed. And like you said, it was Mario Kart was better looking. I don't think I would agree. I think like the art here is really good, and the, like the amount of stuff that happens on screen at points is just like
there are times when shit is like exploding and you got colors everywhere. I just think like the design of everything is a little more clean for like driving through like the Mario Kart courses. Like it just looks nicer to me. I think it's that's probably just like an artistic style that I prefer over whatever Kirby is presenting here. It's an interesting game. Like,
I was gonna say, like, you know, as someone who was like was so on the fence and like, you know, it was a risk because like I might have not liked it. Like, I don't know. You know, I played it all day today. I've seen a decent chunk of what this game has to offer, and I think it is pretty awesome. Like, I think it's pretty cool, and I think it's different enough from Mario Kart to like warrant getting it, you know. And yeah, I think you'll get a decent amount of like hours out of this just doing single player content. The thing I worry about is that, like, say you have people over, you're like, hey, let's try this Kirby Air Riders. Then it'll be like, hey, let's play Mario Kart. You know what I mean? Because, like, everyone knows how to play that.
Yeah. And this is, it's weird. I think it's like,
a big hurdle for it to get over, is that it's like an impossible hurdle almost.
It's a little jarring. Just the core mechanic of it is like you're not pressing the gas, yeah. And to like drift around the corners, like you kind of have to. You can either do like the stutter step, which I don't like doing, or basically like hold down the brake and turn the car and let it go with the boost. Like,
what you're supposed to do.
What Which is I like didn't... that's, you know, that is Mario Kart, but it just feels inverted here in a weird, like, because yeah, well, you're constantly strange. Going no matter what. Yeah, it's.
Well, I was gonna say the other thing that's also weird. I didn't realize it. Maybe it's wrong. I was watching a stream of it today. Is actually holding forward actually is a detriment to you because the vehicle kind of functions.
Yeah, as it grinds your cart into the ground.
Yeah, so you're basically nose diving. Yeah. So you're showing yourself down.
So it's like you. I want to be able to just hand it to people and be like, look, man. It's everything is the B button, just figure it out. And like people probably would for the most part.
But that's also not true because you have the Y button.
Also, like, but like you can't have people over and be like, hey, you gotta play through like this 13-step tutorial to learn how to play. Like, you know what I mean? Like you can't do that. And so it's just like it's just
for
like
something that's fairly easy. Like it is very simplistic once you kind of understand it. It's just very counter to everything we've played for the last like 30 years of kart racers.
Like I do believe if you could put a controller in someone's hand and be like, hey man, everything's the B button. Like you're gonna break with the B button, but you let go, like it builds up a boost meter. Like I feel like I could explain it and admit to someone and be like, try it out. And if you play it a few tracks, you start to get, and they can ask you questions like, how come this? How come that? And you'd be like, you know, you can't press up, you know, like.
Well, yeah, I would also say the other thing that...
But people just don't want to do that. People don't like learning how to play a game. You know what I mean?
I would say the other thing that makes it very different from Mario Kart is, like, because you pick up stuff, but it's not necessarily stuff that... It's not like, oh, I pick up a few shell. It's like, oh, this makes me go faster. And I think sometimes that's also the thing. It's like you're picking up stat boosts, but...
You can. Generally, like, if you're playing a race...
Yeah.
Generally, if you're playing the races, it's like you're either sucking up enemies, which will give you like a simple attack, or the weapon power-ups, which like, you know, fire or you know, lightning bolts or a sword, like and they're, it's just different the way you use them. Like the sword, like you need to get right up on somebody and it'll just automatically use it. Like you don't trigger that. But the lightning bolts, like there's like a meter that's filling up, and depending upon when you hit it, like you can shoot out like one lightning bolt or three lightning bolts or a big massive lightning bolt. There's a bunch of like different weird things that don't quite, it's not as easy as like, I picked up a shell and if I press this button, it'll shoot the shell.
Yeah. And then, you know, as well, like, if you have knowledge of the Kirby series, that would help you there too, which not everyone has. And that's just the thing is like everyone's played Mario Kart at this point and like everyone knows how to play it. And so like there is no barrier to get people like this would be like, it would have to catch on so much to the point that like everyone it, like owns it and is playing at their house themselves. So that when you get together, you can play it. And I think that like this, I have not played multiplayer yet, but I could imagine this could be very fun. But at the same time, on the flip side of that, spent $70 on this, and I am pretty confident at this point that I'm going to get enough single player content like out of it for me to be absolutely sick. I don't regret my purchase at all so far. I'm having a really good time with it. So,
well, can I ask, did you pay the because I was curious about it, and that test run, I'm like, I could see myself enjoying this, but I'm never going to invest the time to actually get good at this.
Yeah, no, I did play, like, the next night, I did play it online against other people, and yeah, it was just, like, chaotic, like, what the fuck is going on? That's the other thing, is, like, I don't feel like I'm good at all, and sometimes I'll just, like, you know, just playing the computer, but, like, magically, somehow, like, I literally, like, my wife was watching me fight this one boss, like, an hour ago, and I was, like, I was getting so frustrated. And then all of a sudden, there's a bunch of shit happening on screen. I couldn't even tell what the fuck was going on. And it was like, victory! And I was like, I turned to Melissa. I was like, I have no idea. No idea, but I'll accept it.
It's funny, because that's Smash, right?
Like, that's exactly Smash Brothers. Except you got used to, people get used to Smash Brothers because of Smash Brothers. But that is exactly how I feel about Smash Brothers. I'm like, you win sometimes. I'm like, I have no idea how I won. I just kept on pressing buttons and things went boom off the screen.
Yeah. Like, well, and it's just like, there was so much going on the screen, I couldn't even, like, figure out. I'm like, did I attack him? Did he attack me? All of a sudden, it's just victory. I'm like, all right, cool, dude.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, like, if you appreciate, like, the deep amount of content that he puts into the Smash, it's here, too. And if you're, like, willing to give a different type of kart racer a try, yeah, I don't know. Again, if I was on the fence, I took a chance on it. If I did not like it, I would tell you. But no, I'm really liking it.
I'm enjoying it as well. I just took Jeff's word for it and bought it. Jeff sent me a text and was like, "Yo, Kirby Air Riders might be legit." That's like, that's enough for me. Yeah. I'm gonna give it a go with something I was interested worse in, anyway.
In terms of kart racing. So
yeah, oh, absolutely. Like this one's high quality. So is it four player, like, on the same screen? Like, is that doable? I didn't imagine. Check. Yeah, because I think, yeah, I, like, know. Just like that, maybe this is something that we throw on Christmas Day when we plan our kart racers. You know, it's not a bad one, but might be fun to watch them try to figure it out.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Kirby Air Riders. Tony, Earl, you have both played Ball Pit, Ball Cross Pit, yes. Which Jeff has talked about previously. Tell us about. Oh, you beat it. Okay.
Yes.
You finally got over the hump.
I'm still avoiding it currently because I'm playing like four other games, but I will. I have it downloaded. I'm ready to go with it. But Tony, Earl, Jeff, Ball Pit, go.
I want to start with what I like about it, which I really like the little town building portion of it. I think those mechanics are super cool. I like building the town and bouncing the people off the buildings to construct stuff and collect things. I think that's really, really cool and really unique. I don't love the rest of the game.
That's crazy.
I feel like the entire game is me, like, sending a character down a hallway full of stuff and just kind of guiding him around and not really controlling what happens.
You're picking the upgrades. It's just like,
yeah,
as a roguelike game, it's too random. I think there are portions of it, like when you pick up the little evolution things.
Yeah.
And it decides for you whether you're getting one upgrade or five. It's like, at that very moment, it's like, is this going to be a good run, or is this run going to suck?
Well, that's exactly the same as Vampire Survivors, where you pick up a treasure chest, you could get, like, one, or you could get five, you know? I guess, to me, it's like a copycat game, but it's still awesome.
Like, except I feel like in Vampire Survivors, I'm, like, controlling where I go and what I do. Like, I feel like I'm, like,
aren't you doing that
not just, like, on it for the ride. And that this game, like, I feel like that's all it is. That's the entirety of the gameplay. Is me just kind of like
the game to going. Play itself.
And like, I don't need a game. I'm here to play the game. I'm not here to just watch the game. And that's kind of how it feels every time. And it's like, what randomly selected things happen along this that make me win or make me lose? And the only like things I can control are the little parts in the town when I can bounce my people off of buildings and like get upgrades. Like that's the only thing that I feel like I can actually do. Do I hate it? No. Do I think it's great? No. Like, it's a nice little thing to put on and pass the time, but it's not like I'm not going to play it obsessively like Vampire Survivor. I don't think it's super enjoyable in that way.
Is, and for Jeff and Earl, who both, I mean, seemingly like it way more than you, Tony. I'm just wondering if, is there a point where like what Tony experienced, like I think I kind of felt this way about Vampire Survivors early on with that game. It's like, it's neat, but like, there's like a moment where that game finally clicks and you're like,
yeah, the moment
I played it for 9 hours, by the way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean,
like... sure. The moment where it finally clicked for me was like 5 minutes in, where I was like, oh, this is literally Vampire Survivors, but as a shmup. So like, I don't agree with Tony about what he's saying. Like the gameplay is fun. Like, although
it's fine.
There
it's
is a nice, point in the game.
It's a nice. Yeah, go ahead.
There is a point in the game where you unlock a character who will literally play the game for you. So you are literally doing nothing except you
can choose. I have unlocked this character who chooses everything for you.
But what I do is
I played once and I'm like, okay, well, I am never using you again.
I attach another character room to level that character up. And I hit start, and I sit back and smoke a joint and watch the fucking level go, and it's fucking awesome.
So you have just absolutely like turned it into a
I've beaten the game, and I'm still doing this. Like last night before I went to bed, I smoked a joint watching the fucking run go, and I really don't have anything else to do. I'm just like, I want to level up all the characters. Like that's the only thing I would hold up against it is like. It lacks content compared to Vampire Survivors. Compared to Vampire Survivors now, because there's so much in Vampire Survivors now. But even at its base game, there was more to that game than this. Like, there's only like I think 8 levels to this, and that's kind of it. But I still, I want to get all the characters. I want to like build up the other characters and be able to run through the game with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Earl. You were thinking this could shake up your game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I enjoy it. I think it's really fun. I think it's really fun. I enjoy Breakout. I enjoy like that. I always like the idea of like taking something that's kind of common and remixing it in a way. And I think this game does a good job of that. I do, I guess, to an extent, I enjoy the upgrade system a bit more. Because I think during the first one, I didn't understand what was going on. But once I got the second run, and I actually kind of was paying attention, like, okay, you know, you need to like get each ball to like level 5. And then with each one, you can fuse it. And then once you fuse it, you can create an ultimate thing with all. I'm like, okay, like that stuff, I was like, okay, that's the.
That's there's so many cool, combinations too. Yeah. You know,
I mean, some of them are fun. I like the magma ball; it's cool.
And then, like, some of it is learning like your strategy and learning like maybe what not to do. Like, I think the first time I did it, I got the ball that will bounce back off of anything, and I'm like, oh, but it's kind of annoying because then you just have a ball that's stuck at the top of the screen when you need something really quick with enemies in front of you.
Yes, the one that goes through the enemies and they'll hit back. Yeah, you're like, oh, all my balls are at the back. Like, it's fine to have that ball like at the end, but like
it's good. It's good until it gets like dense with characters and they all get stuck up there, and you're like, I'm going to die,
and I'm going to die because I made the idiotic choice.
Yeah. I always wanted to make that character work too. Is that like the embedded? Is that was it?
Well, I think is it a
specific... I've had some good runs with that one though, with that particular character.
Oh, no, like, yeah, I stuck to it a lot, but then like on the I think it was the fifth level, I could not beat it with him. Like I just could not do it.
So, question for you guys. So, Earl, you mentioned Breakout. Our buddy Sean has mentioned Arkanoid. Jeff, you compared it more to a shmup.
It like, starts to feel more like a shmup the more you go on.
You know what? No, this is what the game is. It's a combination of Galaga and pinball.
So, you're like speaking my language,
Tony. Like, dude, you're gonna like it, dude. You're gonna like it. Like, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yes.
Okay. So you're not controlling, like you're not shooting yourself. Like it,
you can shoot yourself, but one of the things you learn early on is there's a button you hit, and then your character just shoots out the balls, which is kind of the other annoying part. Back. Like I really wish, and I haven't either, but I really wish you had some control over the order. Like it's really annoying to have balls that do different things. You're like, I want to shoot this ball into this group of guys to do this. This other ball is going to go through them. Well, I don't want to put that ball in that same path.
What was that, Jeff?
There is a character you unlock that makes the game turn-based. And I have not used them because of that. Because I'm just like, why would you want this game
to be? I don't know if we'd want it turn-based, right? Like Tony just wants.
Basically, saying
I just
want
control over the order of the balls. Like I want to decide which ball.
I imagine it would give you that, wouldn't it?
I don't know that it necessarily would. I mean, you would definitely be able to aim each ball carefully, which I guess would be.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I have not tried that guy, and I probably never will.
That kind of seems like it would ruin the flow of the game. Like,
yeah, it's insane where it just becomes like a turn-based RPG where you're like.
Like, imagine turning Vampire Survivors turn-based, Chris. Like,
Let's talk about that.
Into a card game, for example.
Billion hours.
I turned into a card game, exactly.
All right. Well, it sounds like I'm gonna need to play this. I do have it downloaded, so
you need to play it.
It's fine. I don't hate it. I don't want to sound like I hate it. I don't hate it. I just it's not on the same plane as Vampire Survivors. I don't think it's close.
I've
heard people say that. I just disagree. Like I'm like with Earl. Like I love this game. Like,
yeah, and I think
the only thing that puts it below it for me is that like it has less, and it's a copycat. Like it is stealing the ideas of that game in a lot of ways. You know,
and I do wonder about that. With like Vampire Survivors is like I played other ones of these, and like nothing is quite clicked in that same way. Like that one just this... kind of like had it perfect. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm going to play this. I'm going to give it its fair due. It's just like that. That's my feel of like these other games.
This is that to me. I love it to the point. I might buy it.
Yeah. It's my Game Pass. Yeah. That's the other thing with Vampire Survivors too. Right. It's like $5.
Yeah,
you can buy that game on everything.
Yeah.
And because like that game clicks so easy, it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna level it up on Xbox, I'm gonna level it up on my Steam account. Like I'll play it everywhere.
Again, that's how much I enjoy this. I'm probably gonna do it. I'm probably gonna get it for Switch 2 at some point and do the same, like to have an excuse to go through the whole experience again.
All right. I'm playing a bunch of other games. Some of why I stayed away though is I was playing that Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, and that one just
no.
I played like one round of that, and you know, I was like, oh yeah, I see, yeah,
I see the flow of it, and I think because I like Deep Rock, I like the humor and stuff. It's not Vampire Survivor because. It does. It's like Vampire Survivor. I think not minus, but I think there is an element of like there's an element of because this game I think could get too cruel too fast.
Oh yeah, it gets very difficult. Like it's throwing a lot at you. This is more the Deep Rock Galactic Survivor is more like Brotato 2, where it's like the environments are I mean, Brotato is one environment, but even here, like, the environments aren't all that, they're not all that interesting. Like, it's just rocks. I'm interested to play Ball Pit, so I'll give it a go. Jeff, did you play anything else this week?
I played a game called The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker.
I've never heard of this game. What game is this?
It was a GameCube game, but like, you could play it now on the Switch too.
Yeah, I mean, why not? That's why not?
That's what I said. It like pulled me away from, what the hell else was I playing? I was playing something on. Well, I'm playing Dragon Quest II. And it kind of pulled me away from that, and it pulled me away from Ball Pit, because like, Wind Waker is just so good. Despite the fact that it feels pretty aged at this point, like, or there's things about it that feel like, the controls, dude, are
not great. Funky. That's the shame, because they fixed them. Like, it played so much better.
I know. I would love to play the Wii U version, right?
Why couldn't they just release that version?
So like, when you're controlling the camera with the right stick. Yeah. It's like inverted. It's like left is right and right is left.
So many games from that era, like
from that. Yeah, it was weird. It was like they, I don't know. They figured it out at some point, but anyways, you could go in the suspend menu and you could remap buttons. So I swapped left and right on the right stick, which is great for the camera. It's not so great once you get the Wind Waker wand and they're teaching you how to play songs and you have to reverse left and right in your head because you have remapped the controls. So like, the basic Wind Waker command is like up, left, right. You know, like basically the Epona song.
Yeah, and you would need to press up, right, left.
Yes, like, and to the point, like, I didn't realize this when they were trying to teach me because I kept failing it. I'm like, I am pressing the buttons. And then I watched how I was swinging the wand. You know, they show Link swinging the wand. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I have fucked myself. And I don't want to switch the camera back now because the camera feels a lot better the way I have it. But I've only learned that one song so far, but any song I have to learn, I have to like in my head tell myself, you know, up, whatever the opposite is of the right and left.
Yeah.
That also extends to like, to the left stick. It's the same thing. Or it's not the same thing with the left stick. Like, let's say you're throwing a boomerang and it switches you into first person aim mode. Up is down and down is up. It's just like, and right and left. Like, why did you guys flip these things? I don't know why this was so common back then, but it was. So that's tough, but God, the game is still like, it's still really charming and just like an amazing Zelda game. And you know, going out on the ocean and exploring in the boat is just so fucking awesome to me. Like, it's so atmospheric. But what's funny about that is like, it doesn't let you do that for a while because it forces you into two dungeons like right away. And I think the game only has like four dungeons. It's like kind of nuts how they like front load the dungeons, and then it's like, now you go do this this ocean sea, you know, faring shit, which is where I'm right at now. I finally finished the second proper dungeon. I don't know, it's just, you know, it's the Wind Waker. You all know what it is, but it's still a really great game.
I played Black Ops 7.
The best Black Ops?
No.
Seventh Black Ops? No. Is it even the actual seventh Black Ops game?
It is the seventh Black Ops game. I think Dunkey said it's the 23rd Call of Duty game, though.
Also insane.
Yeah, so this is a sequel to Black Ops 2. which was on the 360 and PS3. I'm sure you all remember the story to that one. I don't. There are bits of it I remember. I remember he
had the rest of the Vietnam one.
No. So the Vietnam one was the original Black Ops. This is the one that took place in like 2025, which is the year we're in right now.
Great.
It was like a future war scenario, like moderately future war scenario, where you had to rescue the president of the United States. And there were like flashbacks, though, to like Frank Woods and that stuff from the original Black Ops. You play as David Mason, who, I don't know, Mason is a big character in Black Ops. I don't remember who he is. Frank Woods is the one everyone remembers. I don't know. There's a story here. It's stupid. It's very much like, yeah, it's very dumb. But Jeff, you played the Black Ops 6 campaign, right? And
I played everything.
Like, you remember there was a like some like, you know, chemical agent or something that made you, you know, see shit, like fractured universes and stuff. So in 6, there's this chemical agent that like fucks with your head and like makes you fear things. And there's a couple like interesting levels in 6 that kind of play off of that, because you're seeing shit, like zombies and monsters are chasing after you, or like the universe is kind of like fractured, so you're doing like platforming and using a grappling hook to jump from island, like sky island to sky island. It's nuts, but that stuff was really good in 6. That's the entire game of 7 is like focused around just that
tripping out
chemical agent. Yeah, so there are levels that are like normal levels, and then there are levels where you're completely tripping out. So like you have these sky islands, you're chasing
Scarecrow.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there's a moment in the game where you are on the USS Barack Obama, which is an aircraft carrier. That is a ship that exists in the original Black Ops 2. So that is something they've just pulled forward here. You are on the deck of that ship and you are fighting a massive Michael Rooker.
I saw this.
It's so dumb. There are boss fights in this game that make no sense, because it all takes place in like this fear-based universe, like where
is, you know, Scarecrow in this?
There is no Scarecrow. But there are weird, like, you fight a Resident Evil plant monster. That is a
Poison Ivy's in it.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
you're kind of making this sound cool, dude.
All right, okay. That's kind of like, I'm like, I kind of want to play this now.
Okay. Stop making it sound good. Well, I'm going to right now, because it, Call of Duty campaigns historically have been single player campaigns. This is co-op campaign. And it is not designed for you to play by yourself.
Oh, God, no.
Like, so I played the first 2 levels by myself. I was like, I'm going to play it single player because I don't want to play with people. And I don't know anybody playing it right now. So I'm going to try and play it by myself. You can opt out of matchmaking. It'll set up a lobby for you by yourself and throw you in. The game does not really scale for that. Like maybe there's some less enemies, but the game is designed around you playing with other people, and if you go down, they can pick you up. And if they can't pick you up, you can respawn. You don't respawn right there, but you'll respawn.
Yeah, you know, as long as there's one person alive, you're keeping the thing going.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah.
And like there's a timer, but if you go down in this game in single player, you're done. Like it's,
that blows, dude.
There's no checkpoints. There's no mid-level checkpoints. No
checkpoints?
Like not in the traditional sense, right? So in a Call of Duty game, like you'll get to a certain point and you can just like save and quit and cut out. And like, you come back to your game and it's like, could be in the middle of a level. If you quit in the middle of a level, when you come back, you have to start that level over. You have to finish the level when you're playing it.
And Call of Duty levels are long, dude.
So this is a short campaign. I think it was like, probably took me 4 hours. I did, after the first two levels, just started matchmaking with people.
Scaring me through this, go.
Well, it was, yeah, it was like, I need other people with me. They did carry me through the final level. Like, we were just, I was getting my ass kicked. Like, run out and just like immediately get blown up by a robot.
This sounds awful now. Like, it's, I don't know. It's just not it, what I...
I think it's a fun, it's fun because it's like stupid. Like, there are, like, you fight the plant monster and a giant Michael Rooker, and you're calling in airstrikes that are a giant machete onto like another boss. Like, there's some cool shit in this. Yeah, it is a fever dream.
Okay.
I would love the option to do the campaign co-op, but I don't like how that sounds, feels like forced.
It's absolutely forced.
Impossible. Yeah.
It's absolutely forced, and it's like, oh yeah, there's an option for you not to do it, but we've made it so that, like,
you're not gonna like it.
Yeah. It's a miserable experience if you do it that way. So I like was like, oh, I want to see this through, and I finished it. It only took like, you know, 4 play sessions or whatever. But my fear is that, like, if you pick this up in a week or two, no one's playing the campaign. Like, no one's going to be playing. Yeah. There's not going to be anybody to play with you. Because you're matching in to the levels. So, you know, if the first couple levels, like, who's playing that? There's not going to be anybody.
I mean, it is such a big game that maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe you wait a minute or two, you get some people. Yeah.
But yeah, at some point, like, it's going to be dead, right? Like, there's not going to be
any. Yeah.
So yeah, that there's that. So that's disappointing, because Call of Duty campaigns recently have been pretty good. Like,
yeah,
like Black Ops 6 was a really good campaign. Cold War was a really good campaign. Modern Warfare 2 was good. Modern 3 Warfare, was okay.
Yeah.
I didn't play Vanguard, but
I liked it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, so like they have good campaigns, and I don't know what the hell they were trying with this one. It's very weird. Yeah, so that's Black Ops 7. Multiplayer, it's Call of Duty multiplayer. Yeah.
I think, like, I'm skipping this year, even though it's free.
Yeah.
If you're bored, get into it if you're bored.
Yeah. It's like nothing about it was like, oh, this is great. I'm gonna play enough multiplayer that, so I think I'm like level 40 now, and you prestige at 55, so I'm just gonna like gonna hit that, and then I'm done. Like, I'll be done with this game before the end of the year, multiplayer wise, which is a shame, because Call of Duty multiplayer is fun. It's just, yeah, whatever,
it's fun. And both the campaigns and the multiplayer have been great for years. Like, I think they've been really, like, really solid for the most part lately. So,
yeah, and this one is just not quite as good as, like, the multiplayer. I don't think it's quite as good as Sixes was. The maps are a little better, but it's a lot of people because they added wall running back into it. So, like, it's people that have been waiting for that shit to return, and they're way too good at it. So they're like double jumping off of walls and hitting you in the head somehow with a sniper rifle while doing it. And it's fucking annoying. So, that's Call of Duty. Tony, did you play anything else this week?
I finished Ghost of Yotei.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed. The story is a little cliche, but it's told super, super well. So I think, like, going through that whole game is definitely worth it, even though I think Assassin's Creed Shadows is slightly better.
Okay.
The one thing I thought was funny, there's a portion a moment during that game where you face off against the final boss, but it's like really early on. And mm-hmm. your character, like the final boss will only like use, I can't remember. I think it was his spear. Like he wouldn't use his katana. He wouldn't pull it out. And your character's like taunting them to like, you know, pull out your katana. And he's like, no, you're not ready. And then when you're in the final battle and you're fighting against him and you like, you know, defeat all of his other weapons. And he's like, you're finally ready. And he pulls out his katana. I was not ready. That was like it was the toughest fight of the game by far. I died so many times. I did eventually get through it, but it was just kind of funny. He's like, you're finally ready. No, I am not ready. I am not even a little bit ready.
It's like you lied to me.
But I like that game a lot. I think it's great. Cool. The open world's kind of empty, so if you're like trying to play those games for open world stuff, you're not going to love it. But I don't think you personally, Chris, would do that. So,
no, I think that's a game I'd probably like mainline, right? Like,
yeah. And if you mainline, you're fine.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
So,
I should probably finish Ghost of Tsushima first. So,
yeah,
which it'll save me. Like that'll save me because like I can wait till. Yeah. Yotai goes on sale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Neat. So, anything else besides Ghost of Yotai?
I did pick up Europa Universalis 5, everyone's favorite strategy game.
Yep.
I only played it for a little bit. I was playing through the tutorial. The game at this point has so many bugs that I'm going to wait for them to fix most of them. Some of the bugs are hilarious. Mm-hmm. Today they put in a quick patch. I can't speak English anymore. That accidentally deleted the number 6 from the game.
Not 7.
So if you look at the map, you pull up like something that's supposed to show the population of all your provinces. All the number 6s are just not there. So like if you have like 6,000 people in a province, it just says comma and then 3 zeros after it. So
that's weird.
That's weird. Yeah. I am very excited. The game seems to have a lot of cool stuff. I did play through the tutorial and it seems like they're just kind of having like weird issues, but the actual game itself is super super cool, so I will get into it at some point, but like, you know, I'm probably gonna wait a little bit for them to work out things like digits.
Good idea.
Yes.
All right. Well, Jeff can't wait for
lots of EU5 talk. Yeah. It'll be great. It'll be good for him.
I want to ask a question. Maybe I heard it out of my friends talking about Civilization 7 this week and not being great. Or issues with it. So I was curious if have you played it or
I have played it. I played it earlier this year. It was clearly, I believe what I said at the time was like it's like in beta, even though they launched it.
Okay. And I think they had an update this week or recently and people were like, it's
there's been numerous updates at this point. I always say this about Civ games, so like they're not really good until the first expansion comes out. So for what it's worth, there has not been an expansion released yet. I am looking forward to getting back into that game, though. I think this one was a little better at launch than some of the other ones, but we'll see. It may not be quite yet.
I mean, those games also, like a lot of these grand strategy games, they improve over time, right? Like when expansions start coming out and get a little more content.
Yeah. Civ games always seem to be lacking, like, there seems to be, like, a system that's utterly broken at launch. You're like, why could it launch like this? And then they'll release an expansion that magically fixes that system for another $20.
Yeah. And then we'll do that for the next 3 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Earl, anything else that you played over the past couple weeks?
We talked Kirby. We talked ball pit. I think I talked about I started Helldivers. I've been fanning out of that. I do enjoy it. I do enjoy like the little meta narrative. It is a bit of a grind, though. It is very, very much a grind of a game, though. Pokemon's Z to A, I think. Yeah, so I think it's just mostly been cycling through that. I'm sure I'm going to think of something that I probably forgot. I'm sure there was a recent puzzle game or something, but no. I think Kirby and Ball Pit have been the new one, the new hotness for me. I want to pick up Age of Imprisonment, but $70 is out to, just my minor rant because it's Black Friday and all these deals are going on. I hate seeing $50 as a discount price now for video games.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a discount.
No.
Where's my 30? 30 is a discount price.
Yeah, because I feel like Borderlands 4, I'm like, Borderlands 4, $48. I'm like, that's not the discount price. Like, that's the price I want to get a discount from. And I'm like, yeah, and then I get 35% off. I'm like, yeah, that math, but that does not feel good to me. Does not feel good at all.
I'm a little disappointed in the sales, the Black Friday sales they've currently put up. Like Xbox just put up theirs. I think Steam just put up theirs a little while ago. I've been waiting for the Mafia game, the Old Country, and not on sale. So. Boo.
Because there's a few games I'm kind of having my eye on that I want digital. It's the Capcom Fighting Collection 2. You can pick it up on Amazon right now for $25, but that's a game I'd rather. I mean, honestly, I'm more buying it because it has Power Stone 1 and 2. I don't want a disc for that. I just want something on my system that I can, like, I'll pay it 3 times and be done with it. And it, like I said, Borderlands 4 is up there, but it's $50. I'm like, that's not a discounted price for me. It's so weird to just see these games and it being like, I saw some other games where it's like, it's again, you're going into the $50-$60 actual discount, and I get it mathematically, it just feels wrong because I'm accustomed to like this time of the year, $25, $30 for those games that you missed out on,
yeah,
and that's not happening. I was mad that there was a very random ass Switch 2 sale earlier today on Amazon, but by the time I woke up, it was all done. Because this is the thing, especially with Wario 64, it's like these things happen in the middle of the night. So I think the sale started at like 5 a.m. And it was like Galaxy 1 and 2 for like $52 or something like that. And like I said, it's not much of a discount, but it's much better than spending $70 for two games I adore. And then a bunch of like I think Donkey Kong and Mario Kart were at 40 something, like 48 or something. I'm like, okay. But by the time I woke up, and then what was the other one? There was another game I wanted that was like $8, and I missed it by probably 5 minutes, and nowhere else has had it on sale. Like, now that I see that it could be $8, I'm not going to buy it for anything more.
Yeah, like, oh, I know they'll go that low.
Oh, I know a game it was. And well, part of the reason is that it doesn't have great reviews, but like people, Sky Oceans, Pirates for Hire or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that kind of looks like
exactly.
Yeah, that's one I have on my Steam list.
Yeah, but I'm like, it's not a $25 game. $8 though. I'm like, yeah, I'm into it now. So bad. I mean, who else is into it? It's that you bought it in the middle of the night. So, what can you do?
All right. Well, I have one other game I played. Played Luminous Arise, which is the
Tetris Effect
Luminous. Yes, the Tetris Effect Luminous. It's good. I don't think it's as good as Tetris Effect. Also, I'm not as good at Luminous as I am as Tetris.
I don't remember even how to play Luminous. Like, I know, like, the line would go across.
So it's everything is a cube. So all the blocks that come down are a cube. Your well is, it's wide instead of like narrow and tall. It's a wide. So you have a bigger area.
Yeah, left to right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're matching. So the blocks, they're all cube, but they can be, you know, they could be different color. So there'd be two different shapes or colors that you're matching. So, you know, it could be, let's say, red and green, and it could be three green and one red. And then you're like trying to twirl them so that, because you got to link four together to get a clear. So that's kind of how that works. Problem with Lumineza Rise, it's not really a problem. It just doesn't work as well as Tetris Effect, is that Lumines already was Tetris Effect. Like, that's always kind of been what it was, is it has like a cool soundtrack over it. And as you advance a level, like, it changes kind of the theme and everything to what you were already playing. So it doesn't have that like wow factor that Tetris Effect had. And otherwise it's just, it's Lumines, but, you know, with speed up, speed down, depending upon where you are in the journey mode. It's cool. I'm playing it on the Ally X. So it, you know, I'm playing it in handheld mode, which is where Lumines is at its best. Yeah. I wouldn't rush out to get it unless you really love Lumines. I like it. I think I probably could have waited though to get it. And that's it. That's everything we've been playing. We're going a little bit late here, so real briefly, we're gonna take a look at the Game of the Year awards.
You mean just expedition crowning ceremony?
Yeah. they announced all 29 awards for the Keeleys. The one everybody kind of cares about is the Game of the Year nominees, and that was Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2 on the Beach, Donkey Kong Bonanza, Hades 2, Hollow Knight Silksong, and Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Anything you're kind of surprised at here? Or
wait, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 is on the list?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I was going to say, it's more surprise. This, how do I phrase this? Because I do think Donkey Kong Bonanza is a Game of the Year contender. I don't dispute that. And I'm not, so, but what I find funny is that Donkey Kong Bonanza and Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 are nominated for Game of the Year, mm-hmm. and almost nominated in no other category. There are other games that are nominated more in different categories than these two, but not Spirit Fiction, and I think Ghost of Yote are nominated more times than either of those games, but not nominated for Game of the Year. And this always confuses me, because I think we had this discussion multiple times before. But if you're Game of the Year, a Game of the Year contender, but not a contender for like Best Game Direction, I feel like those are so intertwined, because it is almost the same games.
It is. Yeah, it is. I don't know. I don't think I really understand what Best Game Direction means.
I never knew what it meant, but it's like, I think it's one of those things where like, Jeff probably said, like, you have a best directing, you have a best movie separately, but you're not.
It makes nominated. More sense in a movie.
Yes, like, because of the director.
You could see the directing in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, in a game, I don't know that I necessarily. I guess you could feel a thumbprint on, like, Herbie Ehrreich is a great example. I'm like, this is the guy that made Smash Brothers. Like,
well, that's the thing. Tell. You could do that, but then you'd have to, like, oh, you know, best. Like, technically, Best Game Direction should be the studio, but then Studio of the Year is a separate category.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, or is studio. It a category?
I don't see Studio of the Year on here. No, not on here. Now it looks like that's one they got rid of.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's okay. That's again, it's so frustrating, because I guess Best Studio is also a weird one. Because at this point, most studios put out one game a year. Best publisher would also just feel skeezy. But yeah, again, I don't think anybody. I still need to play this game, but I don't think anybody. I think everybody assumes that this is Obscur's year to use. As far as game of the year goes,
yeah.
Have any of us Death Stranding people?
No.
I played the first one. It was fine. I'll play the second one when it hits a legitimate sale.
Yeah, Chris will play it for $20.
Yes.
$20.
I'm not paying $48.99 for it, but yeah, if it hits for $20, I'll play it. That's what I did with the first one. Yeah, and none of us are Hollow Knight people either, right? Like,
it's impossible.
But I prefer my knights to have some filling.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But again, I know that was one. Hades. Again, it feels like, and we'll do this when we talk about our game of the year, like our countdown. Because I feel like there was a few contenders early this year that kind of lost out to just being out early this year. Because again, I feel like Spit Fiction was one that I thought was an early game of the year contender, and that kind of got negated right away by Blueprint, which came like 2 weeks after that. And then they both just kind of got heaped over by Kirskure. And that just kind of dominated the conversation, where almost everything else is like, it's a great game, but is it, you know, X, Y, and Z? And I'm sure there's
going to be... Like,
go ahead,
Jeff. I had the same thought. Like, you know, you have stuff like Doom. You have stuff like Assassin's Creed Shadows that came out so early in the year. And because it spent such a high quality year, that's like... there's some recency bias going on. Like I keep a list going. At the same time, Expedition 33 came out early in the year, and you know, I'm standing by that one. So
yeah, but that's what I mean.
I think it's a sign of a good year.
I think it is, but I also think it's one of those games that it came out, so it took out the oxygen in the first half of the year, that all of those great games were like, oh no, this is the game of the year. And I think it was more people seeing other games too. Like, this is, and then like that's why almost all of these are on the back half of the year. It's because we need other contenders now. I mean, other than that, I think Death Stranding's like June, Donkey Kong July, Hades is September, Hollow Knight September. I think Kingdom Comes was early this year.
Earlier, yeah.
Yeah. So that one I don't know as much, but yeah, it's I will say I don't think any of these games. The nominees were anything that I did not expect. The only I was surprised by the exclusion of Spit Fiction and Ghost of Otai. I think part of it, again, if you watch the Game of the Year, had leaked before his whole presentation, but like watching the actual presentation, I'm like, okay, these have to be like the five contenders, because in almost every category, it is Hero Obscure, it's Death Stranding. It's Ghost of Otai, it is Spit Fiction, like best narrative, best art direction, best music. And I'm going to call BS on best music. Because.
Where's South of Midnight?
Exactly.
Yes, hey, absolutely.
The best music of the year.
That wouldn't be my choice.
It may not be your choice, but that has to be a contender. Like, it's unique. It's fun.
Sure. I would put Ball Pit as a contender. Like, I thought each of the first like four levels of music are really great, but nothing has hit me as hard as Clear Obscure. Like the music in that.
Oh, it's very good. Yeah, it's like it's excellent. But I don't like. It's crazy to like for a game like South of Midnight to have. You know, that one song when you're going up the tree there, that whole
level. Yeah, that is so fantastic. And like the fact that it's also a game about the influence of music in some ways and how that kind of...
I guess I just don't love that music as much. I don't know.
I love the music in the game, but I also think it's one of the reasons I also love it. It is so different for video games. It is like we don't often get like that Southern... jazz, bluesy music in video games, especially vocal tracks like that.
And what I've heard of, and like not to take anything away from any of the other games here, like outside of Clair Obscur, which Jeff I think does belong on that list, But like the music I've heard from Hollow Knight and Hades and Ghost of Yotai is all like, this is kind of what you expect. Like, just like the kind music of the and, music.
The music in Clair Obscur like stands out. Like you remember it. Like,
and I think the same with After Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I have a playlist of film scores that I've made. And I added like 5 or 6 songs from Clair Obscur to that playlist. That's how much I really enjoyed that music.
I mean, I listened to that tree song separately from that game because, I mean, I think one, it's just a fun song because of how it explains what you're doing. And that, oh, you do they, like, it's a narrative and exposition, but it's also just really funny and catchy. And again, I'm not saying that's obscure, but like, I think it should have been a contender. It, like, I don't understand how in this year, South of Midnight.
I guess I'm like trying to separately make my argument for why Expedition 33 that's like the best.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it should have been a contender. Like the fact that it was not nominated at all is just BS to me.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
Some of these, like, I was surprised. Again, I've not played it, so I can't go to bat for too much for it. But best narrative, I've seen a lot of people talk about Dispatch. Surprised that was not up there.
Yeah, and it was eligible, right? No.
Yeah, it would have been. This is the thing that bothers me about the awards, because I don't know the eligibility window, because Deadpool VR was nominated for best VR game. That game came out 2 days ago.
Oh, so that's weird.
Because, yeah, somebody, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize Deadpool VR came out. So I looked it up while he was talking about it. I'm like, oh, it comes out November 20th or something, or November 18th. I forget when it came out. Also, did not hear anything about it when it came out this week.
That's weird, because Dispatch just ended, last week. So I was thinking maybe that's why it wasn't included. But yeah, if Deadpool just came out today and the awards went up yesterday.
Deadpool's announcement, Deadpool release date was November 18th. What is today? 21st? No, today's the 20th.
Yeah, the 20th.
Deadpool came out Tuesday. The award announcement was Monday. And so it should have been eligible. Like, what might have happened is it might have been like, oh, they didn't send out pre-advanced copies of Dispatch so people didn't have to play the full story. But like, should have been eligible. Because I saw people also complain about the fact that Indiana Jones wasn't nominated for Game of the Year because it wasn't eligible last year. So it's like one of those things where if we talk about the bias of earlier year, it's going to be even more confusing when it's not, when the previous year gets nominated.
Yeah, there was never a chance. Like, I'm glad that it got nominated for Best Action Adventure Game, but yeah, it wasn't. I did not expect it to make Game of the Year this year. We would have had to have a really weak year.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's one of those things where it's going to be funny to see. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, I honestly don't understand at this point Best Ongoing Game. It feels like it's the same games every year.
Well, it's like, and to me, so you have Best Ongoing Game and then Best Community Support Game. Isn't that just like a game that's continuing to be ongoing?
I don't know if it means like how the community how the studio communicates with its community.
Hmm.
It also just seems like a weird thing. Like, you have great customer service as an award seems weird.
It's like, here's the best customer service of the year.
Yeah.
I think this is the third year in a row that Baldur's Gate 3 has been up for an award. So,
all right, game of forever.
Maybe it'll bring home another award. The only other thing I saw here is one of the category for best debut indie game, and I'm forgetting the name of it because they've already removed it off of that list.
Was it Megapunk?
Yes. No. Yes. Yeah. They said, please take us off of the nominations list. Like, it's an honor to be nominated, but we're not actually a new independent studio. It's just the name is new. Like, cause I guess it's by like a guy. And he's done other indie games, so And to just, you know, we were just talking about Dispatch. That is up for best debut indie game. So Dispatch was up for awards. It just did not
win best narrative, which again, I do want to pay that one. I will. And I mean, it's like $30 I've heard, and then it's like superhero themed. So I do want to check that out at some point. I've heard good things about it. I don't know if it would have made more sense to just do it when it came out weekly, but.
I mean, now they're all there, so you can play them all. Yeah. And if you want to play them weekly, you can, Earl.
I could. I guess that is true.
It's I think they were doing two episodes a week, so.
Yeah.
But that's the Keelys. They're in 3 weeks, I believe. So go vote, I guess, if you give a shit. I don't. I don't watch them, so. We will talk about them, though.
Yes.
There'll be trailers.
We always do.
Yeah, well, I mean, if based off our usual new recording schedule, we'll talk about them a week after, and not like have it on in the background while trying to.
So, we might have it on in the background because I will not be here on the 4th. I'll be traveling to Massachusetts for a wedding, so we'll be recording the 11th. Or we won't. Who knows? And yeah, Metroid's out, right? Is that the 4th?
Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna be doing on the 4th.
I mean, maybe not. And I hear it talks too much.
I'm so skeptical of this game that I'm like, it's gonna get delayed. It's gonna get delayed. You know, it's
delayed. Jeff doesn't believe it's actually coming.
He's gonna
out.
Open it. I pre-order the game. He's gonna open the case on release date. It's gonna be empty.
When they announced the release date of the game, I think I messaged Chris or someone. Or I was like, yeah, but it still might not. You know, like, I've never believed that this game is real and it's coming out. And I'm very skeptical of it being good, but like, I'm still super excited for it. Like, to me, it's like one of the big three. It's like, there's Mario, there's Zelda, and there's Metroid. And to have like a new, like, I don't count Dread, like, to have a new, like, real.
Wow.
I don't know people that didn't like Dread, but like,
you can have bad taste. You can say it.
You like Dread?
Yeah.
I know most people.
But I also like Other M. I know my opinions don't count for Metroid games.
I like the Other M. I like the Other M better than Dread.
Wow. Okay.
But, but like, you know, there's a couple of Metroid games that blew me away. There's Super Metroid, there's Metroid Prime, and there was Zero Mission. But like, Metroid Prime is like the one. And so if I get a new one in those series, that's pretty huge. And I'm excited for it.
And there have been talky characters in other Metroid games.
Yes. I mean, I think Other M is the one that kind of gets people off. But no, Metroid Prime 3, I think, was the part where it started.
Yeah.
Like, so they've introduced side characters throughout the series and stuff like that. I mean, Super Metroid doesn't talk, but it does start off with a narration, like, with her. Like, they give a reason for her going to the planet Zebs and all that other stuff. But again, I think people want that sense of isolation, which I get. But it does
it's
also
just seem having like this like MCU guy like talking to you, like.
But it also seems like it's that. It sounds like he's a tutorial-esque character because it sounds
I hope.
Like, hour, and he was gone like halfway through. But from the trailer, the overview trailer that they showed, it does seem like there's going to be other people that you work with. But again, I assume it's just going to be a thing where like you go. You rescue them, you set them up in shops, they'll probably help you with upgrades and maps and stuff like that. But you otherwise...
I heard if you scan him, like if you scan him, like one of the things it says is like he's extremely talkative, so I would imagine that the other NPCs are not as bad.
Yeah.
I heard Arthur Geese talked about it on his podcast, Rebel FM, and he says like, yeah, like early on, like it is... kind of what you were saying, Earl, he's kind of like a tutorial type character. And like after about 15 minutes after you meet into him, like he goes off and does something on his own. Like,
well, yeah.
You like drop him off at a hub town.
Well, I think. You drop him off and then she goes about her day. at, again, I think this is on Nintendo. This is the part that they decided to showcase to people. Like, it's a thing that people
still are like the previewers to act like it was. I don't know, man. I feel like
it sounds like
they're looking at me about it. Like, it's just like, okay, yeah, it's annoying. I'm sure he's annoying, but like, if you drop him off after 10 minutes, it's like, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, the good and bad thing is, it sounds like he was designed. It's like, you know, like sometimes you design a character and it's like they're not supposed to be annoying and they end up being annoying. It's not like he was just designed to be an annoying character, because it sounds like, you know, they, like, Samus doesn't react to him, or Samus just kind of gets in the silent treatment. And that, but I get it. I think you want to humanize people, and I think it's also a way to get people into it, because it is, I think, she's not a silent protagonist, but she doesn't have anybody to, like, it's much better than having her talk to herself throughout the game, which is a trope I sometimes dislike in video games, and I blame Nathan Drake for it. But yes, like, having people talk to themselves to explain what's going on is weirder to me. But well, again, we'll see. It's just really funny that, like, this is like the previous came on. This is, and to be fair, this is what the previous were talking about. But it's like, okay, but the game seems fun, right?
Yeah, like that. Yeah, that's every. It looks like the gameplay is fun. Yeah. Like, you're doing Metroid Prime shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess core.
Scanning stuff and.
I think the missed opportunity here is worse that everyone's like, oh, it just feels like Metroid Prime. Or I'm like, it's been 20 years. Like, you know, you could have came up with, like, could have evolved it more in some way. But again, at the end of the day, I really love Metroid Prime. So if I get a nice HD version of that with a fucking motorcycle, cool. Yeah.
Well, it's a double-edged sword because I understand it. But at the same time, we see so often with video game and video gamers where it's like, why did you change this? So-and-so works so well. And the other thing is like, this is so similar. Why did you not make something different? Where people want it both ways. Because, I mean, calling a spade a spade, we're all old enough to remember the reaction to Metroid Prime was actually not great.
It was negative. Because,
yeah. Oh, why did you make it a first-person game? Like, yeah. Like, oh, they're just trying to make. I think
it was perfect. Doing. It was amazing.
They were like, why are they trying to make? I mean, there was also a lot of production issues with the original Metroid Prime, because at the time, I think Retro was doing like three games, and the two other games got canceled, and like, Miyamoto had to come in and salvage, you know, parts of the game. But I think it's hard to say that Metroid Prime is not a classic game. It is a classic game, but like at the time, that experience. And the other thing is, there's not a lot of games that offer that experience in 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, it was not a first-person shooter, you know? Like, it didn't feel like a first-person shooter, even though it stuck true to what Metroid was. It was awesome. I remember, like, a friend who lived down the street, and he was, like, a massive, like, Nintendo hater. And I was like, here, dude. I brought my GameCube over to him, and I let him play that. And he's like, yeah, you were right about that one. Like, I let him, like, play the game, and he loved it. Also, similarly around this time, remember when Wind Waker got announced? And, like, everyone saw that and was like...
Yep.
And now I'm playing Wind Waker, and I'm like, I want a new version of this that combines, like, what Breath of the Wild is. Like, can you imagine if they made a new Zelda in the Breath of the Wild mold, but it was Wind Waker? Like, it was an ocean? Oh, my God, dude.
Well,
I want that game.
I don't think they ever go full Wind Waker again, because I think
I want that art tale. I want to be on a boat. I want to be on the ocean. But it's a big, bigger open world.
It is either the worst or second worst on 3D Zelda game. I want to say it might be Majora's Mask is at the bottom.
I'm sorry, what?
As far as worst selling 3D Zelda games, it's either...
Oh, we're selling. I thought you said worst.
No, how do you feel about... How do you feel about trains?
I don't count Phantom Hourglass the same way. Spirit Tracks. Sorry, Spirit Tracks.
I don't like either of those games.
But yes, I think what their middle ground for that was Skyward Sword. Because Skyward Sword had like the Twilight Princess kind of adult proportions with like that watercolor painting, but that would
also... like I want the true openness of Breath of the Wild like that kind of like chaos and sanity and like just stuff crammed into every crevice applied to you're on an ocean on a boat. I want that, and I want that art style back. I think the art style is better than the Breath of the Wild art style. And I, oh man, if I was in charge of Nintendo, you guys would have an epic game coming.
They'd also be in the poorhouse, but
no,
it's more Metroid games. Let's get rid of Donkey Kong and Kirby. More Metroid.
No. I wouldn't. No. I love them all.
But you would prioritize like Metroid and
I would get rid of like I would kill Pokemon. And I would
you'd kill their cash cow.
I would kill Pokemon. What else can I kill?
I would point out I think Pokemon Legends ZA just ZA has sold more than the Metroid Prime franchise combined so far.
That checks out. Like all those Pokemon games, they come out and they sell more than like a lot of games.
I would have some quality standards for that fucking series. Fuck.
But sometimes everybody needs that cash cow. Like, I mean, we got a Pokemon game last month. We got a Pokemon game in what, 3 months from now? We got Pokemon DLC next month. They have a whole Pokemon store in Japan. Like, you print off money with that. You get your Metroids, and you get the five people who play Metroid games. All right.
But Jeff's like, Pokemon is canceled, and then Nintendo folds. He's like, oh, oops, sorry.
But Chris, you don't want a Breath of the Wind Waker.
I want
the weapons break. The weapons don't
break. Maybe I think it's okay. So if we're gonna do this. Yes, give that art style. I'll give you your full-on open world. Like, at we need real dungeons.
I mean, here's
like full-size dungeons.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want the real dungeons back.
Can also do shrines. Shrines are fine.
I want both. I do want shrines there still, but Tears was like a half step. Like the dungeons were like okay, like they're kind of dungeons. But yeah, I want the full real dungeons back. I want the shrine. That's the thing, though. I want the shrines there too. I want the open worldness, the RPG element of it, dude. That's the game. That's the game you should be working. I hope they're working on right now.
I will say I want them to do a Ocarina of Time esque when like that whole you get a dungeon. Each dungeon has a special weapon. You get some elaborate
puzzles. I think you could do that in the framework.
Not in the way that they did Breath of the Wild, because part of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom is that you can break the game in ways that are happy for the player, and I don't mind that. But I also like really well-designed puzzles where it's not just like, I solved this puzzle by just flipping this tiny thing upside down and the ball goes away.
There's gotta be a final balance, because I'm like, it's like not like I disagree with you. Like I like, to me, I prefer the. I really do. And so like there's gotta be a way to marry the two ideas. There's gotta be a way to do it.
I think that maybe it's kind of like maybe a Metroid thing where like you go into dungeons and maybe like some of the abilities that you have are disactivated for one reason or another.
Yeah.
Like maybe you don't necessarily get to break. I think again to your point, Tears of the Kingdom, I think Sarma that was done in the challenges to get up to like the dungeons or what some of the I forget what the spirit companion things were called. But you know, like those, like the wind guardian and the stuff like that you get. Sure they have an actual name. I don't remember what it's called. But were like some puzzles and stuff designed around that. And so if you can take parts, like I guess design more like set pieces that for dungeons and get around that. But I get it. It's like boomerang, bombs. Grappling hook, but I did like get into the item that having puzzles designed specifically around. You have this item right now. What's different? How can you use it? And because I like Zelda games and I like puzzle games for that. Oh, aha moment where something kicks in your head and you can put two and two together.
I personally love like, you know, the dungeon I just did in Wind Waker. You get the boomerang, and then the boss at the end is a plant that hangs from the ceiling. And you have to throw the boomerang at its tentacles or, you know, it's whatever. Like,
Like, I love that. Like, and that's like one of the things I think is like missing from the new ones. Just smash it together. Figure it out. You guys are smart. Figure it out and fucking give me an ocean, an oceanic Wind Waker sequel that is also open world.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff, but that is for the future. It is over 2 hours. And...
Yep. we'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll be. Somebody will have the Game Awards on as we are talking. we'll have Metroid Prime. That'll be out. I think there's some other stuff as well. Yeah, Metroid Prime 4.
It'll be out.
Hopefully.
Will Marvel game be out too?
Marvel Cosmic Invasion's out December 1st. That's on Game Pass, so that will be out.
Yes. We should play that together. Yes.
We should. Because it involves Jeff like 87 players, right, or something.
Jeff hates multi. Jeff hates those games.
Yeah, Jeff, not a fan of the beat 'em up arcade game. So,
not really. No.
What game is coming out?
Marvel Cosmic Invasion.
It's like Turtles. It's by the same team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So should be a good time. We'll enjoy it. Jeff won't, but he'll be awaiting Metroid, and he'll play that. So he'll have that. We'll have Cosmic Invasion, and I'm sure some other stuff as well when we return. Jeff, say good night.
Good night.